Hey, my name is Zach. I'm the lead pastor here at Restore. And at our church, we talk a lot about wanting to be a part of restoring faith in Jesus and the church. So we want you to know, wherever you find yourself on your spiritual journey, whether you're deconstructing or reconstructing, whether you're disentangling, doubting, rebuilding, no matter where you are, we want you to know that you are not alone. And we want to be a support for you as you journey down this road of faith. So if you have questions or you need support, we would love to chat with you. You can reach out to us through our website at restoreaustin.org. And we hope you enjoy this week's message.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you? It is good to see you. Glad. Hey, one of you here likes me. Great. Hey, I'm Matt. I lead our worship and production teams. And I'm glad to be here preaching, I guess. Some sort of preaching. I wouldn't say it's exactly preaching, but talking to you this morning. We are in our summer mixtape series, and like Lindsay said earlier in announcements, it's something we've been doing for, is it 3-4 years? I'm terrible at any of the like records of the history. If you were here for Hot Seat Sunday, I don't know anything about years, apparently. But usually we bring in outside voices into summer mixtape. Pastors, theologians, activists, authors, I mean, it's just a whole group of people, diverse voices from outside our walls to learn from. And it's, I think, been amazing. And even in COVID, COVID actually helped us in this process because we could Zoom interview people from all over the world. It's pretty neat. But this year, with Zach being on sabbatical, we thought it'd be really cool to just hear from our internal staff and leadership team and hear our stories of faith and our journeys and what makes us and our leadership kind of, you know, us and different in some ways. So when we originally workshopped this idea, I was very, very, very excited about it. Mostly because I have in the past year or so really grown, I should say, in a lot of different faith aspects and a lot of different perspectives on theology and things that I probably would have never touched when I was younger and kind of a new Christian, but now have found to be just so life-giving. And I was very, very excited to actually share that today, some of those things. Whether fortunately or unfortunately, not quite sure yet, a lot of that has changed, or at least something in my life has impeded this joy that I felt. And that is doubt. Just plain doubt around faith. And I'm going to share more about that here in a minute. But in the spirit of mixtape, I want to start with kind of my faith journey, just so you can hear from another person, you know, what faith is like in their shoes and through their eyes. Chat a little more about kind of where I am right now and some of the things that I've experienced in the last few months. And then some of the things that have helped me, and I hope to continue. And if you're ever in a similar place that I'm in, that might help you on the journey. So kicking it off, you know, I am, my wife Emily and I, she's in the back. We've been married for a little over 10 years now. And yeah, thanks, it's been awesome. It's flying by, love it. We've got two kids, they're 5 and 2, two boys. They're absolutely amazing. You know, I say that like, I really thought I would enjoy being a dad, but it is like 1,000 times better. And it's also 100 times worse. So it's like, do the math, you know, it's like, it's a net positive, I think, overall. But I, you know, absolutely love that. I say all the time, it's the best job I've ever had. We both are, Emily and I are both born and raised in the suburbs of Dallas. Yes, we are part of that group of people who moved to Austin from another city in Texas. So very sorry, which I guess I probably don't feel bad anymore because like it's probably 3/4 of this room that are in that boat or something similar. So sorry, all you OGers, I guess, but just gonna have to get used to it. We moved down in 2015 to Austin to help start Restore. So it's been a little over 8 years now, and it's been a really amazing, amazing journey, which I'll share more about. As a really, really young kid, the first kind of church that I remember being a part of is a charismatic church. Anybody know charismatic church or have any background? Yeah, okay, a couple of you, great. You know, very young kid, went very often with my folks. And the thing about the charismatic church is they place a lot of emphasis on what they call charismatic gifts or spiritual gifts. And those that's kind of an umbrella term for the three, I guess, main gifts: the gift of speaking in tongues, the gift of healing, and the gift of prophecy. And you know, pretty early on, that was like drilled into me as very important. And you know, not having any other perspective on the world, and obviously being a child, like you just kind of are in that, and that's what you kind of are given to understand of the world. And you know, I learned pretty early on that like God was incredible, or is incredible, is unbelievably powerful, and has things to give us to also use in the world, and miraculous things. And so as a kid, I mean, probably almost weekly on Sunday mornings, I would go to the youth group. I would go to the church and the youth group, like the main service and the youth group. And I would pray fervently for one of those gifts, usually tongues. I don't know why, but I think healing was just too far, and I don't know, prophecy. I mean, what do I know about the present as a kid, so the future, whatever. So I spent, I mean, so many years praying for that. And that was kind of like, it was held as something really important and something that you could, if you had some of those gifts, you could know two things. One, you were saved, which if you can imagine, that's kind of feels like the point of going to church when you're not, right? Some level of like, I need to be in on this, right? So you could know that you are saved if you have this gift or one of these gifts, and you know that God is going to use you with these gifts. It's not just a gift for you and for, you know, something for you to be happy about. It's something that God is going to put you on a mission to engage in the world. So there's almost a sense of purpose in having those things. So again, my entire young childhood was full of this like, okay, God, today's the day. I'm praying. I'm ready. And that gift never came for me. And not even close, even though I felt like I should be close at some point, right? And you know, that it's hard to say that was bad, but it was conflicting, right? And I think over my time at this church, actually what was probably the larger through line challenge is that I didn't know anybody there, and nobody knew me. I knew the pastor's name, a few leaders' names who would speak. That was it. Zero relationships. And nobody knew me at all. I would go in and out. And from that, if you can imagine that experience, had a hard time reconciling this big God who could do this miraculous stuff, and then me just kind of maybe there, maybe not. Does anybody even know? You know, am I important in God's plan? And so, you know, like I said, years in that scenario, and a lot of this kind of came to a head one Sunday, and I'm going to share probably my biggest spiritual trauma with you. Not something I've ever shared publicly, but it's something I want to share because if you have ever been through this, I hope you know you're not alone, you know, because I've felt alone for a very long time. One Sunday, the youth pastor gets up, and I mean, he's super fired up about the gifts, and he says, hey, you know, I believe that learning how to speak in tongues is just like a baby learning a language. You know, you have to be around it, you got to hear it, you got to be immersed in it, and then you just got to try it, you know? And so me, I'm like, okay, let's go. And he says, is there anybody here who doesn't speak in tongues? And young Matt just was like so ready to raise my hand, you know? And I remember too thinking like, this is probably a bad idea, you know? And there were about four or five of us, you know, and he says, okay, you guys, come up here, and we're gonna all surround you. I mean, I guess they didn't say surround, they said lay hands on you, you know, something like that. And we're all gonna start praying in our I think the prayer language is another common term, prayer language, and you know, you're just gonna start praying for the gift, and by golly, it'll happen. And that is exactly what happened. So imagine being, you know, surrounded by a bunch of other peers, and you know, you're just sitting there praying, and then all of a sudden the room just erupts in chaos. I mean, it really feels like chaos. It was just everybody's tongues. And, had this moment of like, okay, God, this must be it. This must be the time to experience this gift. And about 5-10 seconds after that thought was, what if it's not? What do I do now? Like, it's happening. Do I lie and make something up? Because I can't be the guy who doesn't get the miracle in the big moment, right? What do I do? And so I just started babbling, you know? I just started saying stuff, and it was a great victory for the church that Sunday. But I left that service so confused and hurt, really. The thought process was, okay, I know lying is bad. I just lied to everybody. Does everybody know that I lied? Do you lie? Does it sound real? I don't know. Wait a minute. Is everybody lying? No, it can't be that. I mean, we know these gifts. And wait a minute. If God doesn't approve of lying and I'm lying, like, is God mad at me? Like, have I just done something to offend God in church with these people? And I tell you, that conflict was very real for me for a long time. And I think the worst part was nobody followed up with me. Nobody gave me a phone call. No one asked, hey, let's talk about some next steps for you in your faith. It was just back to the normal, you know, there on Sunday, you know, not there during the week. And that was for years. And then I thank God. I absolutely thank God that a friend of mine who I played 1 year of baseball. I actually played like one semester, I guess you could say, of baseball as a kid. And my friend who was on my team invited me to his church. And looking back, like, we weren't even close. So it's like kind of odd that he actually invited me. But for whatever reason, I went to his youth group. This was in middle school. And I had the complete opposite experience. Like, from day one, had a blast. We played dodgeball. We ate pizza. We hung out. It was just like, it's like what school should be somehow, right? Like, it's just like so much fun. And then, like, after, you know, all the fun and games, we took this big group and we all broke up into these like little smaller groups. And each little group had an adult there who was asking questions and talking about life. And from the very beginning, I learned I actually do matter in life. Somebody does want to know my name, know my story, know who I am, and know what's going on in my life, and ask me about faith, and ask me about my thoughts on it, and cared that I grew. And this was a Bible Fellowship church, which is a small kind of denomination. It's not really a denomination. It's a network, I would say, of churches. And it's, I think, fair to say that, I drank the Kool-Aid at this church. I never left my entire middle school and high school years. It actually even caused this kind of small rift in my family because I didn't want to go to that church anymore. I wanted to go to this new church, and it seemed like, oh no, what's happening to our family? Well, good things, because actually my family goes there now. But like I said, hook, line, and sinker for me, all around community and belonging. I think that's really formed a lot of my faith and my perspective on what church should be. But looking back, like, my time in the charismatic church, or my experience there, I should say. And, I'm not painting a broad brush. Every church and theology in person is different. But that's where I experienced the first doubt in my life. I had always believed that there was this God, this big God, who controlled everything, who built everything, who sustained everything. But there's where I felt like, wait a minute, what if it's not true? And thankfully, a group came in and helped me out of that and gave me community and purpose. And that church is actually where I met Zach. he and I met when we were both guest leading at a young adult service, which is kind of funny because, like, at one point I was on staff of the church, and then I wasn't, and then he was, and neither of us were actually working in the young adult services, and they called us to come in and, you know, lead at this service. It's funny, like, you put two guys who aren't really a part of it in charge. Okay. And so it turned out to be great because we became fast friends. And really, like, I mean, very fast friends. I think we realized, hey, there's something different about you, and let's figure out what that is. And then eventually, probably a couple years into that, Zach asked my wife and I to consider moving down to start Restore. And we took about a year, believe it or not, to actually give him an answer, mostly because we really liked our hometown, you know, and weren't sure that, you know, Austin with all these crazy liberals was the place to be. You know? Being from North Dallas, that's the perspective, sorry. you know, while we were working through that and thinking through that, Zach and I used to get together before I had to go to work, and it's kind of funny now, like, I don't know what he was doing in mornings when he was working at a church, because it's a lot of meetings and hanging out, right? But before work, we would get together and talk about theology and faith and kind of like our perspective of church and what church could be. And amazing, awesome conversations, and I'll always remember this. And one that stands out in particular was I had this growing desire to learn about this certain perspective of theology, and we had a conversation about one word, and that word is TULIP. Anybody know what TULIP stands for, the acronym? Yes, a couple of hands. TULIP is an acronym for the 5 points of Calvinism. And I will save you from any sort of discourse about them. If you don't know what they are, you may consider yourself lucky. I don't know. It's worth looking into, I suppose. But at that point, I had really taken a lot of Kool-Aid in Reformed theology. And I remember going to Zach like, hey, check this out. There's these 5 points, yada, yada. It's amazing. Wow, isn't this awesome? This is how everything in the world works. And Zach, you know, I remember being shocked, actually, that he did not agree with me. And he said, you know, there's some of these things I can get behind, but there's a few things, mostly the vowels, I'm not sure about, you know. And we had, I wouldn't say a heated discussion, but, you know, from my very limited perspective of reading a couple books to his perspective of, having years and years of ministry training, you know, it was a little lopsided, the argument. He said something that has always stuck with me, and I think probably always will. He said, don't read just one perspective or one person's thoughts on this faith, this theology. You cannot let yourself get stuck in this echo chamber of faith. And honestly, that's when, I mean, at that point, my faith was like this puzzle. It was this cube of whatever, some kind that's like, if I just orient it just right and stick it together, it will make sense. Or if I just, understand the pieces well enough, well, then I will have the right understanding. Then I will have the right faith. Then all of these things in my past will make sense. And then, I think I'll probably be well-equipped enough to be able to share and to lead, I guess you could say. But Zach just wrecked that. Silly guy. I'm sure he's wrecked that for you, too, if you've been around long enough. And my faith went from this, like, you know, rigid thing to this movable, I don't know, amorphous thing with soft edges that works together and grows and changes over time. And that's when I realized, oh, this is deconstruction. That's what this is. It's not a like, hey, I don't like this piece of faith. It's like, how does this stuff work together? And what are the ways to think about it that maybe aren't helpful? What are the ways that are? And so that's where I've been for, I mean, probably, you know, 8 years of just this slow, beautiful, I think, process of how God has changed my mind and my heart on a lot of things. And my life experience even has really changed a lot of my faith. And like I said, especially in the past year, some of the things that I've grown to love about our history of faith have become just like so life-giving and so securing for me that I was very excited to talk about today. But a few months ago, I experienced just the most unbelievable doubt. And it's, and I'm not kidding. Like, I feel like I almost woke up thinking, what is this? Does this make sense? I'm like flying in the face of everything that I had learned and had been, you know, growing in. It's just this idea of like, man, what if this is just a bunch of made up nonsense? What if this is just thousands of years of people trying to prop things up to either stay in power or just have a good idea even? What if this isn't real? And, you know, if you can imagine, that's some people would say that's like an existential crisis of some kind. I call it the existential ontological crisis. Existential meaning like, what does it mean to live? And ontological meaning like, how does the metaphysical play into the nature of our being? And it's, you know, a light process, nothing really major. But my thought process has been, and just, you know, to just like open up the brain a little bit, has been, okay, if like there is no God, where does that leave us? Like, what is life without this major construct of my entire life of a loving God who has been active in our world? And if that isn't true, if that is not a foundation for me, what's next? I mean, what literally does life mean? Is this just like chemicals and molecules and just essentially kind of worthless? And I mean, if we don't have meaning outside of ourselves, what is injustice? What is suffering? Does any of that even matter? I mean, really? And I found myself in a dark place. And I wish I had more answers. At this point, the questions begin to stack up over time. And the answers, hard to come by, I should say. But I've found that what I know that I can grow into is some level of comfort in being okay not having some of those answers. But what I know that I absolutely need without a doubt to continue is hope. Some level of hope. Some level of looking back onto what God has done to carry on. And so for me, the first place that I went to really look and maybe combat some of the doubt is the scriptures. And like any probably depressed person, any good probably depressed person who loves the Bible, you go to Ecclesiastes. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, if you've ever read it, it reads like a depressed guy writing a book. And I haven't read it in so long. I think I read it probably the last time I was in high school. Mostly because I was scared of it, you know, a little bit of like, I don't want to be depressed. I'm not going to read this book. But then when you're in it, right, you do it anyways. And the whole of the book is, it's attributed to Solomon, but we don't really know. The whole of the book is this like grappling with, what does it mean? Like, what does it all mean? What is the formula to life? Why isn't that the good people always get good and the bad people can't always get bad? Why is justice, it doesn't work out like that? And wait a minute, is it actually better to be rich or is it better to be poor? You know, is it better to be young or old? I mean, and the author, I mean, like, I'm just throwing these questions out there, but he grapples with them. And it's just like dying to figure out, why doesn't this make sense? What is the formula for life? And he does this over and over and over again. And he has this argument, and then he resolves. He has this argument, and he resolves. And he resolves by saying, this too is hollow, a shepherding of the wind. He says, what you're trying to fashion here and what you're trying to discover is hollow and is impossible. It is impossible. It's like trying to shepherd the wind, trying to get the wind to go where you want it to go. It just cannot, will not happen. And I don't know about you, but I found that so comforting. Like, okay, I feel crazy, but it's not, I mean, like, it's understandable. You know what I mean? Like, is this this impossible journey? All these questions that keep stacking up, they don't have answers. Well, maybe they're not supposed to. It's a bitter pill for me to swallow. But the book goes on, and he goes back and forth, arguing. And he says, at one point, he kind of just like has this release moment in chapter 9. He says, go, eat your bread with rejoicing. Drink your wine with a good mind, because God has already approved your actions. Now stop there for a second. What does that mean? God has approved your actions. I mean, I get to like just go rejoice, enjoy life, right? But God has approved your actions. I don't understand that. And I still don't, to be honest. But there's a part of me that thinks the author knew, like, look, what's gonna happen is gonna happen. Like, what happens in life, you cannot control, no matter how hard you try. So keep moving forward. He goes on in verse 9. He says, see life with the woman that you love all the days of your hollow life that you've been given under the sun. All your hollow days, because that is your share in life and in your labor that you expend under the sun. Everything that your hand finds to do, do with all your energy, because there is no action, thought, knowledge, or smartness in Sheol where you're going. I don't know about you, but I found so much comfort in that. He's like, love the one you're with. Enjoy that, because these are the days that you have. The only ones you get. Work as hard as you can. Get this. Because in Sheol, which Sheol, by the way, if you don't know, this is part of the dominant Hebrew word for the afterlife. It is not hell and it is not heaven. It is nothing. It is death. And the word develops over time. But here, what he's saying is like, there's going to be a time you won't work. You won't think, you won't know, you won't try. So YOLO, essentially. I mean, I think that's the best summary. You only have one life, live it. I've never felt more understood by the scriptures. Like, you're gonna have crisis, but keep going. Second passage that has helped me a lot over the past few months is Psalm 73. And this is 100% from, at least I get my perspective on this from Tim Mackey from the Bible Project, who Zach and I both absolutely love the Bible Project and their resources. This is, when I first heard was a sermon he did on the Psalms and specifically about doubt. And let me just read some of it. The psalm starts off, indeed, God is good to Israel, to the pure in heart. But my feet all but turned away. My steps were nearly tipped out. A lot of translations say that I stumbled and I almost fell. But I like how this one reads, I all but turned away. And I hope you can see or hear the irony there. He starts off, it's almost like he's like making sure that he's got this blanket covering. Hey, just everybody's reading this, just so you know, yes, God is good to Israel. Got that, we're all good? Okay, but I mean, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I should do this. And the author, most of his argument is about what he sees in those who do not follow Yahweh. He's jealous, essentially, for all those who don't give a rip about the world, don't give a rip about their community, but prosper. And he's asking, God, why do you let this happen? I've lived all my days in holiness and, on and on and on, and I worry and I fear. Why? Why don't you condemn them? Why do they get good? Now, I don't have that, like, jealousy streak, I should say, but I definitely understood this conflict between, like, here's what I believe. Like, I believe God is good. I believe there's hope, but I experience something different sometimes. And right now, especially, my feet feel like they should go this way instead. I don't know why. And he goes on and he shares a lot. It's a really great book. I really encourage you to go and read and meditate. But he ends the chapter with these words. He says, I've been with you continually. You've grasped my right hand. By your counsel, you lead me. And afterwards, you will take me to splendor. whom do I have in the heavens? And with you, I haven't wanted anyone on the earth. Though my flesh and my mind are finished, God is my mind's crag and my share permanently. I was trying to think about the last time I held someone's hand before my kids and my wife. I can't pick a person. I mean, it's been a long time, right? I love holding my kids' hands now. You know, it's like there's something so unique about like, I got you, dude. You know, you can't get far from me. You know that I'm right here. And I feel that in these words. You were holding my right hand. He ends, he says this in verse 28. But I, nearness to God is good for me. I've made my Lord Yahweh my shelter so as to recount all your deeds. I don't know if you noticed the words are the same there, but I, he starts off, but I, my feet almost turned away, and he ends here, but I, nearness to God is good for me. And let me tell you, there is a huge conflict in my soul and what it means to be near to God. From my roots that say miracles and miraculous and spiritual things means nearness to God, to now, to understanding scriptures, to meditating, to just being alone with God, what nearness is. I don't know exactly how all of this works out, and I imagine everyone's faith is different and everyone's idea of proximity to God is different. But I can't think there's anything better than whatever that nearness to God is. Our nearness to our Creator, nearness to the one who fashioned us together and made us and who loves us and sees us just as we are, who sees our doubts and fears and is not ashamed or afraid of us. And that is what I have just been holding on to. Though the questions stack up, all I've got here is this belief that God has me. He knows where I'm going. He's leading me. And I don't have to be afraid. And I want to end just on that last verse. It ends with, so as to recount all your deeds. This is something that I forget often. I have a good friend who... He basically, his entire thought of ministry is to spend time understanding what God is doing and write them down, remember them, because you're going to need them one day to remember what God is doing in your life and has done and where he's brought you from. And for me, as of late, that process has actually been here on Sundays, believe it or not. When I first started having my struggle, I thought, I mean, am I going to be able to do this up here? Like, can I lead songs when we say Jesus is the only way? And I think so. Pretty sure. I don't have any other answers. Is that a conflict? And I'm honestly very surprised that it's not. Sundays actually are like the probably one big thing for me that keeps me grounded. Standing up here, and I mean, the song we just sang, in the valley, bless the Lord, he will give me his peace. I mean, even just when you're not sure, being together, singing together, I think it's just, I mean, critical. I mean, it's unbelievable that God has given us that together to share in. If my faith can't stand up, maybe yours can help me, or maybe one day it will be the other way around, and maybe one day, you know, we will all need each other for something. It's odd how that seems like it's the design. God, thanks. For me, those are the things that, you know, I wish I had like a bow I could wrap on, like, and now I don't doubt anymore. These questions don't matter, but it's not there. I love what we do here. I love what we've built. And I know a lot of us in this room are fairly new, actually, within the past, you know, year or two, based on the data. I don't know why it's in quotes, it's actual data. And I'm glad you're here. And we want you to know that no matter where you are on the journey, whether you've been a Christian forever or you're not, and you're just kind of checking things out, like, there's a place for you. There's a community, and there's people here who have wrestled with things that that you're probably wrestling with. So don't go it alone. And let's share it together. Can you pray with me? God, I'm so grateful that our faith is not a measure of how blindly confident we are or how often we don't doubt, God, but it's based on you, how good, strong you are, how assured you are of yourself. And Lord, I thank you that you've given us this community and this place to share and to carry one another. Or would you help us to know what that means and to dig deep into doing that in ways that are surprising, that really, God, that align with our humanity, that allow us to be more human in your design. And God, may we long for the day that we get to see you, and when all of our work, our questions, our energy can be laid down, and we can be held in you. God, give us hope. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah. What are you doing here?
I'm just kidding. Surprise. I'm kidding. Everybody open their eyes, and here I am. When you said, I don't have a bow to tie up that message, I just wanted to say, immediately, I'm a visual learner. What I'm thinking is I'm seeing a room of everybody here with their bows untied. You know what I mean? The weird analogy.
I like that. Yeah, it's good.
But that's what it is. We're all here together. We're all exploring God together.
Sure.
Everybody's bringing their questions. There's not a single chair that someone's sitting in with their bow all tied up. So I really say thank you so much for your vulnerability, your honesty. I was personally blessed by it, and I feel like I'm speaking on behalf of our church family. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, couple questions for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's start from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You moved from Dallas to Austin.
Yep.
Did you like it immediately?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much. And it's just like a great love. It just gets better over time.
Okay. Yeah. So the scriptures talk about in Ecclesiastes, right? Eat, drink, be merry. Where do you like to do that in Austin? What do you like to eat here?
Real softball. That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you for not asking a harder question.
I'll ease into it.
Yeah. Man, that's it. Yeah. I mean, okay. So my go-tos are like P. Terry and now Torchy's. Torchy's has the best salad. Let me just throw this out there for like the everyday salad, Airstream salad. Blow your mind.
Well, tell me more. What is it? What does it have in it?
Gosh, you have to ask me that. It's
this is the hard question.
Yeah, right. That's the hard one. it's a mix of greens and chicken and.
Okay.
It's got pistachios, mint. It's got two different kinds of dressing on it.
Options. Okay.
It's whatever. It's good. Just try it. I promise.
I'm taking your word for it. I'm taking your word for it. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so you have boys that are 2 and 5.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your family. How did you and your wife meet? What do you guys like to do as a family?
Yeah. So Emily and I, we've actually gone to the same school or went to the same school our entire lives. So kindergarten through high school. I like to say, she's going to be so mad at me. I like to say she had a crush on me in 9th grade and it just never ended. And then we dated after high school. She would argue that didn't happen. But yes, honestly, all of our time revolves around the kids in some form or fashion. And we love to, I don't know, be outside and play in parks. And my oldest is really into Lego Star Wars right now. Like he could play that like all day, every day. So it's a lot of fun. He hasn't seen the movies yet though. So it's kind of like, all right, well, we'll get there, you know, like you have your fun over here, but wait until you see the movies.
Okay, so a big part of how we know you, right? Man with a guitar. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. I didn't hear much of that in your sermon this morning. So when did you start playing? How did you get involved?
Yeah.
Has it always been guitar? That kind
it's
of
funny
stuff.
You said, I actually had written that in there, but I felt like I might be going long, so I decided to cut it. But I started playing guitar when I was 15, sort of self-taught. And I actually started playing in our youth group when we had this amazing band. And I just wanted to be them, you know? And they actually had to leave, and there was this like giant vacuum of like, okay, this amazing band was here, now they're gone. Who can step up and do it? And I like dorky 15-year-old, I can barely play two chords, you know? I was like, I'll do it. And so honestly, it was just a, it's one of those things, like, there's no one else here, you do it. And I played for years and years and then just kind of moved up and grew from there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. As somebody who also grew up in early 2000s worship music.
No,
I'm not going to sing a song and see if you recognize it.
Let's do it.
Is there just, name drop a couple of the songs that your youth band just like crushed, you know what I mean? What was the go-to of that youth band?
Yeah.
I'm curious.
I mean, oh man, that's a tough question. So I'll go with some inspiration. How about that?
Okay.
Because a lot of those I've forgotten. But originally, we would try to mix in U2 songs, you know, like as many as we could, like 40, With or Without You. And honestly, that was the hook. That was like, this is amazing, you know. So yeah, that was
so the youth, I'm imagining it. So they are coming in. U2 song.
I was not singing the U2 song. Let me be clear, not filling Bono's shoes. But okay. Yeah, we'd sing.
Well, like you would open the service with the song that everybody could.
Actually, no, we'd usually like we'd medley it. You know, we'd like toss it in at the end of the song. Like, whoa, you know, really try to be impressive.
That's
know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Notice we haven't done that here. Okay, so just. FYI, I mean, maybe it'll come one day, I don't know.
Okay, I'm very glad I took the time to ask that question.
Yeah.
Okay, pivoting from worship
more
to what you did speak about.
You
mentioned drinking the Kool-Aid, right?
Yeah.
Potentially gulping the Kool-Aid. When you had different like tradition upbringings, right? Mm-hmm. How did your relationship with doubt change from when you were a kid to when you were in middle school, high school, to this morning?
To this morning? Oh, man,
metaphorically this
morning. Yeah. Just like a little bit of the journey there. I mean, I think as a young kid, like when you don't have questions, you kind of just move on, you know? And maybe as I've grown up a little bit more like stuck in the questions and in the doubt, I'm like, I still have an answer for this. It's still nagging away, you know? So I care more to some degree, but I also think there's like... I don't know. You just kind of get comfortable not knowing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's good. When you say comfortable, there's an implication that it's not as suppressed, maybe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, you just kind of know you got to face some things.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so you talk about Sunday morning being grounding, which I love.
Yeah.
It's the twinkle of hope. Nice. But then you also said it took you about a year to decide that you'd be interested in moving your family here.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about what changed your mind to bring you here today.
That's a great question. Wow, I've not thought about that in a while. And now, how much time do we have? We're out of time. Come ask me the story, because I do have a really odd story about. The like nail in the coffin. Let's probably find a more positive way to say that. They're like, for sure, the nail on the, I don't know, whatever.
We understand.
That was terrible. But I mean, yeah, no, I think, my wife and I, we prayed so much about that for a year. Got to know Zach and Amy more and got to just understand a little bit more of the vision, I guess, as time went on, and then help craft it. So yeah, I think just being a part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, to your joke, we actually are out of time.
No, we're so out of time. So out of time.
So that truly is the last of my questions. Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. I think your journey is something that we all can relate to. Sure. The suppression of doubts and then dealing with them and having to find a way to be comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Sure.
Personally can relate, so I'm sure a lot of us can. So thank you, Matt.
Totally. Yeah.
Summer mixtape, we're still in the thick of it. Next up is... drum roll.
Oop.
Curveball, there's a bit of a switch. Next week is Charles. It's Christy, but next week we're going to be having Charles Samuel up here. So I would really like it if y'all didn't miss it. This has been such a life-giving series, getting to hear the voices from Inside Restore and what brought them to where they are in their faith journey today. Thank you guys all for being with us this morning. I'll see you next week. And with that, y'all are dismissed.